Hello, this is Elizabeth Hochsbergen, an educational psychologist and someone who is excited about your child's potential. Today, I want to spend a few moments sharing with you a little bit about the importance of the interplay between nurture and structure. For children and young people, and even us adults, to flourish, we really need a balance of nurture and structure in our lives. Of course, this sounds pretty intuitive, but let's try to investigate it just a little bit. So when we think about nurture, yes, that includes giving someone affection, encouraging them, being warm and uplifting, spending time with them, and really kind of meeting them where they are. Well, what about structure? Structure involves routines, schedules, deadlines, having expectations, needing to produce, whether it's an assignment or cleaning the dishes or completing some other type of task in the classroom or at home. Structure is necessary to help us work through our day and accomplish things on a day-by-day and week-by-week basis. For our children to develop in a healthy and balanced manner, they really need the adults and parents and teachers in their lives to be intentional about the balance and the interplay between nurture and structure. Let's think about this for a moment. What are some of the ways I can nurture a child in the classroom? A simple hand on the shoulder, asking how things went with the game last night, listening to a little story they have to tell, giving them a nice specific compliment after they've completed something or participated in an activity, just being warm with our body language and our face, and of course our tone. The way we use our voice in the classroom really will send the message to children, I really care about you, I'm excited to be here with you today, and I am really charged about your potential, and I love partnering with you and your brain to help cultivate that potential. At the same time, what might nurture look like at home? Well, it's going to be very similar to the classroom. Whether you're parenting and or homeschooling, it's going to involve kindness and affection and encouragement. But of course, if you're parenting while homeschooling, you know that sometimes you have to put quite a bit of firmness in place in order for your child to get something completed. But back to the nurture on the home front, this is different for each child. When we study our children, observe them, and understand what motivates them, what they're interested in, we can nurture them by spending time with them in their areas of interest. For example, one of my daughters loves to cook and bake. She's 15, and truthfully, she doesn't really want me in the kitchen when she's cooking or baking. And I mean at all, even if I go in there for a drink. Because she is so focused on our culinary creations, she doesn't want to be distracted. So how do I nurture her in this context? Well, when we talk ahead of time about the ingredients she's going to need for what she needs to make, she feels very nurtured when I make sure that we purchase those items and that we have them on hand. And of course, if she wants to make something that's a little off budget, we talk about that too. And if we can do something in place of what she really wanted to do, or save the extravagant creation for a later time. So on the home front, part of providing good nurture is knowing your child and connecting with them in areas of interest. What about my other daughter? She's 16, and she will only be in the kitchen if she really needs to cook or make something or assist with something, and of course do dishes. Otherwise, she would not find it very nurturing for me to work with her to buy ingredients for her to make a culinary creation. Instead, she finds it nurturing when we sit down and talk about something she's been studying in physics or advanced mathematics. No, I'm not kidding. She loves telling me about what they're working on and how she did on the most recent test and how she's doing with her students because she does some private work with students. She finds that really exciting and nurturing. And then what about my 9-year-old? What does she find nurturing? Well, to be honest with you, one thing that she loves to do is sit down and do her grammar and writing homework together. No, I'm not joking. Why does she find this nurturing? Well, because she has dyslexia and she finds the homework to be very difficult to the point that she freezes with anxiety and feels like she can't begin to write the first sentence. So we sit down, get all of our materials organized, look through the assignment, figure out together what we need to do, and then step by step, I support her and I facilitate her ability to complete those tasks and learn throughout the process. When we finish with those grammar tasks, whether they take us 10 minutes or 45 minutes, because some of them do take a long time, she is happy. She's happy because she's completed something that was difficult and because we were shoulder to shoulder talking about it and developing it together. Those are just a few specific examples from our home front. What are some other ways that I might nurture my children at home? Well, if we have a lot of cleaning to do and I know they're frustrated and overwhelmed by it, we'll make it into a game. So we add fun wherever possible. For example, something we've done before is we're going to do a fantastic 45 or a fabulous 1 hour, wherein we break tasks down. We either work in teams or write down the chores and put them in a little bowl and pull them out. And then we work with a timer. And then we race the clock to see how many of our tasks we're able to complete. But we do this together with encouragement, laughing, and pushing the whole way. And then when the hour is over or the 45 minutes, whatever we've chosen, then we're able to go back to our other tasks, even if it's not totally complete. Because if they're very full that day and they have a lot of things to do for homework or other responsibilities, I try to be careful to not overdo it. That's another way that I try to nurture. And then, of course, there's just the time, sitting down together, talking, whether we're in the living room talking about how the school day went or we're side by side doing another task. Time together conveys nurture. And, of course, don't forget the physical affection, giving children hugs, loving on them physically. And of course, you know, some children are much more physically oriented than others, but being aware of what works for them and being responsive to those needs. So that's a little more about the home front. In the classroom, we don't quite have the same context or environment, but we still can provide a lot of nurture just through our body language, the way we communicate, and by connecting with the children. Years ago, when I was a high school mathematics teacher and a high school language arts teacher, I made it my goal each day to try to connect with almost every student. And that was not an easy task because some of my classes were over 30 in number. I remember my Algebra 1 class, I had 33 students. And I tried my best to figure out a way to make really good eye contact or help students with individual problems, etc. And of course, with 33 students, I could not do that with every single student every single day. But I tried when I was teaching the material, going through the algorithm on the board, to use nurture and kindness and encouragement. And I smiled a lot. Let's not forget the spice of smiling, whether we're at home, at the grocery store with our children, visiting relatives, or in the classroom, or in an after-school program. The more we smile, the more we embrace that child's heart. And for some children, they need a whole lot of that. Now, let's take a few minutes to investigate how we can provide structure. Structure can be provided by using routines, schedules, visual schedules wherein the children see visually what the plan for the day is, whether you're at home and using a whiteboard with magnets, or whether you're at school using a visual schedule, or you break your day down into blocks. Providing children a clear sense at the beginning of the day as to here's what we need to accomplish. And of course, checklists, whether they're physical or digital, each time a person checks something off and they've completed it, it does build their self-efficacy, which is their belief in their ability to succeed moving forward, and it tends to just make them more motivated to keep working. The word motivated has the root mot in it, which means to move. So when we're motivated, we are moved to action, whether it's more of an internal motivation or there are external factors helping to move us forward. So structure can be partly supported by providing a good schedule or clearly setting expectations at the beginning of the day. Here's what we need to do. And then, of course, there are going to be times at home or in the classroom where we needed to get this task done and we really only had 40 minutes, but we did not complete it. It's important then to communicate to the children what the next steps will be. Will we continue this tomorrow? Will we continue it later today? Or is it something that's not necessary to complete? Because sometimes there's a task that does not have to be completed. It was just more of an experiment or an exploration, so it did not need the completion factor. However, most tasks do need to be completed, whether it's cleaning or organizing or completing a math worksheet or studying a science review sheet or reading something. Most tasks do need to be completed. And if you don't complete them, it's best to communicate with the children, here's our plan for completing this later, whether they're going to do it later at home or at school the next day or whatever the case might be. Another way to support the use of structure is through concrete time limitations. So in other words, instead of the child feeling like I have all the time in the world to complete this, having some type of clear time expectation set in the beginning. We are going to work on this task for 20 minutes, or we are going to work on this task for 30 minutes, and then later we'll do another 10 minutes. Using a visual clock that shows the time going down, or using little colored sand glass pieces wherein they're 10 minutes apiece or 5 minutes apiece, setting those, and then the child sees the sand going down, they know that they have less time. The idea is not to create a highly intense, pressured situation, but to gently provide a visual reminder we have to stay focused and engaged and do our very best to encourage them and help them complete the task at hand. Structure can also be supported by setting realistic expectations. If you know your child struggles greatly with math facts, then we might need to do the activities in little micro chunks. We're only going to do 3 minutes here, and then later we're going to do another 3 minutes. Believe it or not, with consistent practice in small intervals, the brain can make improvement. Whether we're at home or in the classroom, it's best to set clear expectations and put a time frame in place to the degree possible. And this helps us to provide an environment of structure, wherein it's not just a free-for-all, but there are clear expectations and time guidelines. Now, of course, we do need time for every child, every day, and young people and adults for there to be free time, where there are not heavy constraints or heavy time limitations. When there's too much structure, it will squelch creativity. Also, it tends to shut down their heart. It tends to cause their soul to shut down and to not want to engage when there's too much structure and it's too oppressive. Also, when there's too much structure and not enough time for free time and just for the child to have margin to be and do things that are healthy but don't pertain to heavy duty work, when there's not enough of that free margin in the child's life, too much structure squelches creativity, shuts the soul down, and tends to open the door to discouragement. Now, what about nurture? Is it possible to over-nurture a child or young person? Absolutely. This is why we need a careful, intentional, dynamic interplay between both nurture and structure. For example, too much nurture tends to coddle and spoil children. Nurture alone is not healthy. Children need structure within the context of a nurturing, supportive environment. Too much nurture fails to help the child build a solid work ethic. And one of the best gifts we can give our children, whether we're at home or at school, is a solid and robust work ethic. Because let's face it, folks, life is full of work. And we want our children and our young people to know how to work diligently. They must learn to do difficult things even when they don't feel like doing them. Also, too much nurture without the backdrop of appropriate structure tends to deflate and de-energize the growth of self-efficacy. What is self-efficacy? Well, first of all, self-efficacy is domain specific. So it's specific to each area in our life. So you may have very good confidence and belief in yourself in basketball, coaching that, playing that, but you may have low self-efficacy when it comes to doing your accounting, your basic finance work. Self-efficacy is also domain specific for children. So they may have good self-efficacy in math. They believe in their ability to do it, but they don't necessarily believe in their ability to be a good speller or to have good handwriting. If you want your child or the children you're serving to have good self-efficacy, there needs to be a good dose of structure within the context of nurture. But too much nurture without appropriate expectations, without appropriate scheduling and guidelines and communication about what needs to be completed with goals and deadlines, too much nurture that's devoid of appropriate structure will often lead to the erosion or the lack of development of self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is when you believe in your ability to do something. When children do not have good self-efficacy, they are less likely to engage in tasks and to follow through with them. So the good news is that with an appropriate interplay between nurture and structure, we really are equipped to help children galvanize their abilities, develop them while being encouraged and motivated to stay the course. Because good structure helps to encourage creativity. Good and appropriate structure with appropriate nurture opens the heart up to learning and doing difficult things. And good structure, rooted in nurture, opens the door to hope and possibility. And good nurture within the context of structure builds a child who knows how to work, and they're diligent, not lazy, and it helps them to see their ability and to continue to develop their potential for both school and life success. You can do it. Think about what are the areas where you might need to do a little more nurture, and what are the areas where you might need to put in a little more structure. You see, I believe in you. Take a little time with a notebook. Write some things down where you're providing good nurture, where you're providing good structure, and then also growth areas. Where might you need to put in a little more nurture? Where might you need some more structure? And then build a plan and work your plan. Because as you bring together nurture and structure, you will help the children in your care flourish.